My name is Trisha Page. I'm at Emory University in Atlanta, and I have the pleasure of moderating this session. So our first speaker, well, first of all, the theme, just make sure you're in the right place, is genetics and genomics health disparities, which really can't fit much better with the theme for the conference this year. So I'm very happy to be able to hear our speakers today. Our first is Nan Newell, who's the Oregon Public Health Genetics Program Coordinator. She holds a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology from Johns Hopkins Medical School, an MBA from Kenan Flagler, is that how you say it? Business School at University of North Carolina, is currently working on her Master's of Public Health at Portland State University. And she's going to talk to us about a program looking at use of cancer genomics testing in the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. First of all, I have nothing to disclose. And I thought I'd start by giving a little bit of background on cancer genomics, although I know that most of you probably know this. But the point about why we're studying cancer genomics is that most cancers are from mutations that are acquired over a lifetime, and they're known as sporadic cancers. But there are some cancers that originate with mutations that are inherited. And so it doesn't mean that if you have the gene, you're going to get cancer necessarily. And this is, as with all the rest of genetics, it's a genetics plus environment issue. And why should you care? When I talk about this topic in public health, I always want to make the point that this is an important public health issue, mainly because these cancers are found in people who are younger. And they also are more likely to develop second and third primary cancers. So most public health screening programs screen for people at average risk, which is a good thing. On the other hand, people with hereditary risk of cancer need to be identified to be at high risk and to be screened accordingly. And that screening usually is at a younger age, and sometimes with more often screening or different kinds of screening methodologies. So the identification of high-risk policies, I think, influences public health in a lot of ways. One is surveillance, another is education, which we've talked a lot about at this meeting, and policy issues. So in our program, we have a CDC, we're one of two states that has a CDC genomics grant, and we have focused on the surveillance aspect of genomics. And we're looking at cancer-specific evidence-based genomic tests and family history in Oregon. Our grant has four surveillance objectives, but the one I'm going to talk about today is evaluating disparities in access to genetic services, specifically for colorectal, breast, and ovarian cancer, mainly because those are the ones that are best understood at the genetic level for heritability. So hereditary cancer mutations are the focus. The mutation for breast and ovarian cancer we're looking at are the genes are BRCA1 and 2. And the genes for colorectal cancer are known as the MMR genes, mismatch repair genes. I'm not going to get into the biology behind all of these in this talk. But suffice it to say, they're autosomal dominant mutations. You have a 50% chance of inheriting this mutation if your parent has it. And importantly, accurate genetic tests are available. You can actually find these mutations very accurately. And there is evidence-based medical care for asymptomatic mutation carriers. It also has been determined through a lot of studies that it's economically worthwhile to identify these individuals and these family members with mutations and do this enhanced screening or possible other prophylactic measures. So in terms of health economics, finding these mutations is a good idea. So the BRCA mutations, as I said, associated with breast and ovarian cancer, and I'm about The point I want to make here is that the lifetime risk for women with these mutations is much, much higher than the lifetime risk for a person who is at average risk. The average onset is 15 years earlier than the average risk women. And 2 to 3% of breast and ovarian cancers have BRCA mutations. So these are not an insubstantial number of people with these mutations. Same issues with the MMR associated with colorectal and endometrial cancers. Lifetime risk much, much higher. Average age of onset much, much younger. And again, about 2 to 3% of colorectal and endometrial cancers have these MMR mutations. So the questions that we asked, that we're asking in our study, and we're 2 years into a 3-year study, so I don't have complete data today. I have maybe some tempting data. So we narrow this down to two questions, which is how many Oregonians should be getting genetic counseling and testing, and how many Oregonians are getting appropriate genetic counseling and testing. So we decided to look at 6 data sources, and I want to make the point that at the end of the day, we're not taking these data sources and putting them all into one database. We're looking at them individually. People have gotten confused about that. So just going, counterclockwise here, looking at genetic services, there at the time when we started the study, there were 7 clinics in Oregon seeing adult patients for cancer-related reasons. And we have assessed data from 1,700 patients in 2007 and 2008 from these clinics. And we also are doing a survey of healthcare providers, both primary care and specialty care, to look and see how they use these cancer testing and how they, or if they, refer patients. We are looking at our cancer registry data for relevant cancers over a 12-year period. Our cancer registry started in 1996, so that's all the data that we have. And then let's see, we have done many BRFSS annual sets of questions on both colorectal cancer, breast cancer. We've also done this historically for diabetes and asthma and heart disease and so on. So we have a lot of very interesting BRFSS data on common diseases with genetic influence on them. And today I'll talk about our results from colorectal cancer. We are also interviewing all of the private third-party payers in the state, of which there are 7 major insurers, and also 50% of the major self-insured plans, you know, companies that that do their own insurance, to see what kinds of reimbursement that they do. And this one, the third-party payers, is the one data group that I don't have any data on yet, because we're just getting started on that. And in disparities, we're also looking at Medicaid, the Oregon Medicaid, and at the enrolled adults, trying to see how many of those folks had cancer and had genetic testing. So here are the results that we have to date. The estimated carrier prevalence in 2007 is about 20,000 for BRCA mutation carriers and about 2,000 to 3,000 MMR mutation carriers. I'm not going to talk about the methodology for how we did this today, but if you want to talk about it later, that's fine. And then we also estimated that per year, people diagnosed with these 4 cancers we looked at, breast, ovarian, colorectal, and endometrial, that are likely to have a BRCA or MMR mutation are about a total of about 1,500 people in Oregon. Just some background on our cancer registry. We don't see Oregon cancer incidence rates significantly different from national rates, although Oregon is well known to have a higher amount of invasive breast cancer, Oregon and Washington, than all the other states, and nobody really understands why that is. The incidence rates don't vary significantly by county, and we've talked a lot about assessing race and ethnicity in this meeting, and our cancer incidence numbers and the literature numbers are really not very accurate for anything but the European descendant population. And Oregon's a pretty Caucasian state. 90% of the population is white. So we just used the numbers from the literature to do calculations. We would love to do more on race and ethnicity, but we don't have the numbers at this point. The genetic clinic data from 2007 and 8, as I mentioned, about 1,700 people were seen in, it said 7 on the first slide, now it's, then it was 6, and now it's 5. they keep going away. But of about 600 patients seen in 2008, 313 were tested for BRCA, 21 were for MMR. And compared to the population data and our estimates of how many people should be carriers and should have cancer with these mutations, we are suggesting that only a very small proportion of Oregonians who would benefit from this kind of testing are actually being seen in cancer genetic clinics. Now, we need to remember that not everybody who's tested for these mutations are seen in cancer genetic clinics, and that primary care doctors can order these, oncologists, surgeons, and so on. And we hope to get at those non-cancer genetic clinic tests through some ongoing data that we don't have yet. Medicaid data in 2007, this was a very difficult analysis to do because it was all based on CPT codes. And for those of you who work in the genetic testing world, you know that the CPT codes are not very reflective of which genetic test was done. But we estimate that in 2007, out of 1,700 genetic tests, at most 9 were for BRCA or MMR, and thus again conclude that our Medicaid population is not having as many tests as they should have. These are our 2008 BRFSS results on colon cancer, and this is, of course, the public reporting what they remember from visits with doctors. But what we found was that people with a family history were twice as likely to have colorectal cancer screening, that Oregonians recall their clinician counseling them more if they had a family history, and we're defining family history as first degree relatives here, and that the clinicians also encourage them to have more screening and to make more lifestyle changes if they have a family history. The Oregonians also with family history have an increased perceived risk of the disease, and they also report making lifestyle changes. The BRFSS doesn't have very accurate, good questions on lifestyle changes. As far as I'm concerned, it's like, so have you increased your physical activity by 30 minutes in the last month? There's, you know, things like that. So it's, I mean, they report making them, we don't really know what it means. This is we're doing a large provider practice survey. We have targeted four groups of healthcare providers in Oregon, primary care, including PAs and NPs, naturopaths, which have quite a large ability to do primary care in Oregon, including prescriptions and so on, OBGYNs, and oncologists and surgeons. We administered the survey to about 2,500. About 2,250 were considered eligible, and our response rate to date actually is a little over 50% now, and our target groups are responding equally. We will probably be closing down the survey in a couple of weeks, and hopefully at the Public Health Genomics meeting in a month, we'll have more information for you on this. So assessing disparities to date, we do find significant disparities in the Oregon population. We think only a small proportion of Oregonians are seeing genetic counselors for cancer genetic testing. We're down to 5 cancer genetic clinics. 4 of them are in Portland and 1 of them is in Eugene. For those of you who don't know Portland Oregon geography, they're about 100 miles apart and they're on the Interstate 5 corridor. So what that means is about 20% of Oregonians live more than 80 miles from a clinic, so there's a definite geographic disparity in the state. We also have found that less than 5% of people seen in cancer genetic clinics are either Medicaid clients or uninsured, so having in good private insurance is probably important to get these tests. And interestingly, but probably not surprisingly, breast and ovarian cancer is more recognized by practitioners for its hereditary components, and these people are more likely to be sent to genetic counselors than people with colorectal cancer, and I think that is a result of the huge amount of breast cancer advocacy that's been in the country now for a couple of decades. And finally, I'd like to thank my colleagues, my 3 colleagues in the Oregon Genetics Program, and this as I mentioned, was funded by a CDC grant.
Great, I think we have time for one or two questions if anyone has one. No, I'll start out, actually. So I know that, at least in Georgia, for Medicaid patients to access like myriad testing is very difficult. Do you think that that's contributing to the, you know, less than 5% Medicaid population in Oregon?
No, we don't, actually, because in 2007 we had adult cancer genetic testing approved at the Medicaid level. And so doctors are, so Oregon Medicaid pays for those tests and doctors need to refer for those tests. We think the answer is that they don't know that they can refer for those tests. And we need more education of the providers who take care of the Medicaid patients. We did talk to our genetic counseling groups and they try and get BRCA testing done through Myriad, through their program that lowers the cost or makes it free, and but they don't see very many patients to begin with, so they can't really, you know, work on that. Now, what's really unfortunate in Oregon is that genetic counselors aren't licensed, so Medicaid won't pay for the counseling, but they'll pay for the test, and that's, I think, also really hard in these cancer genetic tests, because we don't think that most primary care practitioners know very much about them, and then they don't know that they actually will be paid to order them.
Okay. Anyone have a question?
I have a question, though, even if it's not well formulated. We know that younger women are less likely to be encouraged to have mammograms, and even now they're saying, you know, you only need to come in for cervical screening every 2 years. What ages are doctors even suggesting genomics? I have a family history of cancer and nobody's ever said anything about it. But they're not going to refer me. They're like, well, you're not even 30. You're not going. And you're not even doing mammograms.
So there's a couple parts to this question, or I'll answer in a couple of different ways. First, we're working with our breast and cervical cancer program. And in Oregon, there has been permission to screen women with mammograms starting at 40, even though the USPSTF guidelines moved to 50. The Komen Foundation is funding the BCCP to screen between 40 and 50. What the problem is, even in 40 plus, is that there's no way in the BCC program that they're identifying anybody at high risk because of family history. So we're working with them now to put a couple extra questions in their questionnaire to try and identify family history and red flag them when they go to the doc. Now, when you get to the doc, that's the other issue. You know, we talked in here yesterday, I think, about the difficulty of primary care docs taking a true three-generation pedigree, and they don't have time, and they don't know how to interpret it, and the EMRs are really bad about this. They hopefully will get better, but they don't really work very well on anything genetic at this point. And so the practitioners really need to know that when they see a family history of cancer, that they need to ask some more specific questions. And there are things like, you know, if your mother had cancer, was it premenopausal? Is there more than one cancer in your family? And another problem in this country now is that families are getting so much smaller that there's not enough data to run the models and that sort of thing. So one of our next projects is to do this healthcare practitioner education, but we need to get the results of our survey first. But in our survey is asking providers, do you take a family history? Do you ask about cancer? Which kind of relatives, you know, first, second, third degree relatives do you ask about? And, you know, we've already heard a ton of anecdotal evidence from the community care doctors. They totally don't have time to do this, and they often don't see the patient again. And they're dealing with some sort of immediate health crisis and diabetes or heart disease or something. So it's a big problem. The other thing about women under 40 is that not only are you not identified, but they're not really good screening methods for them. Mammograms are known not to work very well with younger women, and it's a huge issue. I don't have the answer.